the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, you may have been expecting to see Len, but he is busy last minute. And by last minute, I mean he forgot that he had something else, because that probably happens a lot more when you have a kid. Me, I don't have that problem. My name is Joey, here with another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast on CBP Media Network. So tonight we have Sean Anstey, who's the CEO of Liquid Fintech, co-founder of Big Digital Assets as well. We got lots to talk about. It's been a while since Sean's been on, but we'll get to that in a second. First, okay, we got two sponsors, you know. One is EasyDNS. We've talked about how Mark wrote unassailable, you become uncancelable, all these things. These are important things, okay? But EasyDNS does so much more, okay? And they've been around for a long time. Mark's been taking Bitcoin for his services for a long time. They do domain hosting. They do DNS. They do web hosting, VPS hosting. So if you have a Bitcoin node, BTC Pay Server, Nostr Relay, whatever, and email as well, away from Gmail, which is great. So the email actually is interesting because they have a tool you can just get all your existing stuff over to EasyDNS, no problems, no questions asked, and GPG encrypted email, which I understand is a key to your email that gets encrypted, that helps it become encrypted before the next stop. So even EasyDNS can't read it, even if they wanted to. Not that anyone over there cares about what you're writing. I sure as hell don't. And of course, the domain packages come bundled with email, or you can get standalone. And eventually we will unlock the at Canadian Bitcoiners suffix, I guess. Domain, is that what it's called? I'm not sure. But anyway, use our code CBP Media. And sign up. And if you want to talk to Mark, hit him on Twitter. Hit him on the EasyDNS thing. He's at StuntPope on Twitter. Or you can talk to EasyDNS and get a hold of them. And of course, our second sponsor, new sponsor of the show, Bitcoin Well. So Bitcoin Well, great Canadian company. Adam O'Brien running things over there. He's been on the show a few times. They got a lot going on. They're sort of an all-encompassing suite of Bitcoin services. How do we start this ad read? First, you can buy Bitcoin. They have the online portal, where you can get the most sats for your dollar, better than even the custodial options, which is sick because they're non-custodial. You give them a wallet address and they just send it over, which is fantastic. They also have the ATM. If you use our code, which I don't know off the top of my head, but is for sure in the show notes on YouTube and will be on audio tomorrow when I put this out as well, you can get a discount anytime. So there's always a CBP code running, but on Mondays, the day we do our flagship show, 33% off on the fees. You can't beat it, man. You can't beat it. And that's light KYC, as they say in the industry. I would call it something else, but I am going to work on not calling it that, at least not in the public sphere. And you can go there with a wallet address and nothing else, as long as you buy under $100 and get Bitcoin with cash, which is sick. Also, they'll let you pay your bills. They'll let you sell Bitcoin. Everything is done through e-transfer if you want to on the portal. And there's always more stuff coming out, including savings and other stuff coming down the pipeline. So look out for that. Bitcoin Well, we love them. Use the codes in the show notes. If you want to talk to Adam, just send him a message on Twitter. He's always around, okay? Also, he says he's good at golf. We were talking about going golfing this weekend. He might be in the area, but I'm not sure. Everyone thinks they're good at golf, right? Unless they just admit that they're not. And I think this is the case for most people. Sean, are you any good at golf? I know you said you like fishing and hockey. Are you
a golfer? I'm actually not bad at golf because I'm a good hockey player. I've got a good eye. So, but I'm not a huge fan of spending 4 or 5 hours on the course. I like the 2-hour courses. And I figure after about 90 minutes, we should be back in the clubhouse having beers. So, you know, I'm good for 2 hours and then drinks, but that's about it for me.
Interesting. Have you considered mini putt, sir? It's even shorter than 2 hours.
Actually, I've done pitch and putt. I'm like, you know what? That's a little bit too short for my liking. A little bit, but no, I don't mind it. But I don't have five. I'm busy. I've got 5 hours to spend. I'm sitting on the golf course checking the price of Bitcoin.
That's good. So, okay, Sean, it's been a while. People who are familiar with the show will know you. We talked about Liquid and Big over the years quite a bit. Yeah. And Len and I have been shareholders, and I think maybe still are shareholders. I know that I am,
Appreciate it.
Len is as well. So why don't you, for the people who are new, tell us a bit about who you are first, and then we'll get into Liquid Fintech.
Absolutely. So I'm Sean Anstey, the CEO of Liquid Fintech. It's LQWD on the Toronto Stock Exchange. Also co-founder and principal founder of Big Digital Assets. We took that public in 2017, and we acquired Netcoins. I've been in Bitcoin for 10 years, and I've been in tech for a lot longer, and came into Bitcoin sort of because I was in the tech circles as well. So, but it's certainly, you know, looking at and discovering, saying, of course, we're going to have digital money for the internet. It made perfect sense immediately. You go down that rabbit hole, and it's so much more as you unravel all the threads that are needed to understand it in terms of where we're going with the world of finance and computers and everything else. During that time, I've done mining. I've taken two companies public, all in the Bitcoin space. We've been through several bear markets. The last one, due to recency bias, was the worst because it's happening now. Or was although 2018-19 was not so much fun, and 2014 was after Mt. Gox was, whatever's happening now is always the worst. But that's sort of the show. Right now, we're working on Liquid itself is working on Lightning Network. So we're all about Lightning Network. We've been at it since late 2019. We have a platform as a service that we've actually finally turned up and is designed for enterprises. And we actually have 19 to 20 nodes all around the world. And we're putting our 100 plus Bitcoin across them, and we have 600 plus channels. And we've already routed 300 and a lot of Bitcoin. We share our live. Our sats are live on our website, liquidfintech.com. You can look at the stats page. You can download the information too if you want to use it in your reports. So we're an open book in that regard. So all of our node stats are updated in real time as well. And we want to, we hand that back to the community if they want to use the data for analysis to, knock yourselves out. And it's a global network, so you get to see, 20 distributed nodes all over the world, what they're doing in real time. So.
This is sick. I had no idea you guys had the live dashboard. This is
live
wicked.
Dashboard, right?
It's at lqwdfintech.com, and then you head over to node stats at the top, and it's got it all there. Yeah.
There's a lot there. And so there's it's all built part of Grafana. We're going to add more data to it, and you can actually go in there and you can download it as CSV and in all the individual sections. So if people want to use it in any app or study it or analyze it, hey, it's there to use. We're giving it away. We want to share back to the community. So we're very bullish on Bitcoin. We've been in it for a long time. For those of you I've seen today was an interesting day. We had a big run up and a big run down and all the volatility. I've seen the volatility before. If you've been in it long enough, it continues to march forward. I guess since we talked last summer, I co-authored a book that came out, Trust on the Rise of Bitcoin. I'll just throw it up here. Anybody wants a copy, just message me. I'll give you a copy. I'm not here to sell the book. The book just talks about our philosophies with Bitcoin and what we've seen over the 10 years and how it works. And as part of a compliance company, a regulated exchange that's publicly traded, and a publicly traded Lightning Network company, all that information that's in there, the good, the bad, the ugly, just where we see it. And it's much bigger than what people understand. And we try to boil it down to a real simple, it represents an extension, a continuation of the revolution of the internet. Just like the first version of the internet blew the doors off communications and e-commerce and so much more, Bitcoin's come along and it's changing the world of finance, but it just extends the capabilities of the internet by acting as that eighth layer of the trust layer. And it's solved a long-standing computer problem of how do you create trust online? Sounds so simple, but up until now, you needed a third-party intermediary. And when we look at it from that perspective, you can start to wrap your mind around how big it's going to get. Because we know we've had this talk before, but I remember back in 1999, they estimated the internet was worth $180 billion. And I've been in the internet since the mid-90s, when back in the mid-90s, the banks wouldn't bank you if you had a .com in your name. The law enforcement didn't like you. The internet was evil and for hackers and crackers, and it was a terrible thing. And then the banks themselves wanted to create their own private network, i.e. their own private blockchain. And it was gonna be awesome. They all interconnect the banks and they do all this crazy. And after a number of years, they all switched over to using TCP/IP and the internet as we know it. But we went through all that, and governments said we should regulate the internet, we should shut it down, we should do this. All the politicians pontificating until they, got moved out of office, retired, died, whatever it was, moved on, and the internet just kept marching forward and is this unstoppable force. Bitcoin is the eighth layer of the internet, and it solves the ability to trust online without a third party. And this is something that was worked on for a long time and wasn't solved until Bitcoin came along and solved that computer problem. And so when I look at it from value, and we talk about this, and there's a chapter in the book talking about this, but basically, I remember 1999, the internet's worth $180 billion US, and it would take Microsoft and Yahoo and the big tech companies to rebuild. That's what it would cost. Well, by 2005, Google's going public. You have the iPhone moment, 2006, and everyone's going crazy. Internet traffic is blasting through the roof. By 2010, it's the internet's worth $20 trillion. What's the internet worth today? The original seven layers of the OSI stack, for those who don't know what the OSI stack, it's literally the tech stacks that make up the plumbing of the internet. And Bitcoin, and there's seven, effectively seven layers, and Bitcoin, sorry, that's seven layers right now. The plumbing, what's it worth today? 500 trillion, an unfathomable number, because it's in every fabric of life. And so when you understand Bitcoin solves not just money, like trust, and money and payments is this massive first use case, that just like email and communications just blew the doors off everything. And then it just got used for many other things. And I remember this. I remember people telling me, oh, the internet will never be used for video. It'd never be used for phone. It'd never be used for e-commerce. Why the hell would I want to shop online? All these things, negative, and all these tech problems got solved. And it'll never scale. It'll never scale, yada, yada, yada. A little Seinfeld reference there. I probably shouldn't have said that. But nonetheless, the point is, when you start to look at that, you're like, okay, well, Bitcoin's only worth what, 500, how many, 500 billion, 600 billion, half, too many? Half,
yeah, something like that.
Half a trillion? Yeah. Really? It's literally going to change how the entire internet works, the world of finance, the world of money. The Lightning Network will be the de facto open source payment rail that everyone will use over time. And, you know, it's just, it's unstoppable because it is a continuation of the internet itself. And so I'll stop there. I just don't.
Okay, yeah, it's almost like you had my notes in front of you. So thanks for coming, everyone. That's the end of the show. We touched on all the stuff I wanted to touch on, and we'll see. Okay, so a couple things here, okay? That, first of all, outstanding intro there, and there's a lot. Man, there's a lot to talk about when it comes to Bitcoin, and I think you have a unique perspective. I'm interested in the book. I have that in the notes, and maybe we could start with maybe two questions sort of central to Liquid FinTech. Why should a retail person, why should I, you know, average Bitcoiner, Canadian, I don't often transact in Bitcoin yet. Mm-hmm. I don't think too much about how I want to spend my Bitcoin yet. Why should I care about the Lightning Network?
Right. Well, it really depends where in the world you are. And so if you're outside of North America in our little bubble where you tap your credit card, you don't care that much. But ultimately, the payment rails will be changed and you won't even notice it's changing. And I'm not suggesting US dollar is going to go away tomorrow and the Visa, MasterCard are going to disappear. That's unlikely. It may morph over time, but not within the next, 10 years, 20. You know, things change. But when you're outside of the financial system and you're, the one of the 1.4 billion people who have no bank account and have no ability to access money, suddenly you have hard money. And let's say you're in Zimbabwe or Venezuela or Lebanon or any of these places, the currency is constantly devalued. Well, you can use the main chain to send payments, but Lightning Network allows you to send instant payments for any small number of items. And so you got the scale, which is into the millions now. There's really no limit to the how fast it can, how much it can scale. Now it's just really the speed of the internet. And one of the issues that the Lightning Network had and is continuing to get solved is liquidity. And that's where we come in, where we have our nodes and we have liquidity channels. And that's and through tech and other resources being put on the Lightning Network, you have a much more a higher rate of transaction success, which is going on here. And as that continues to get more and more successful and there's more and more Bitcoin liquidity, et cetera, but it's on there, you're going to see the Lightning Network continue to scale and take off because it just becomes that much easier. Now, right now, you don't have, the UXs are still a little rough. The user experience is there. It's not quite there. But if you're outside of like Canada and America and in a place where you need it, you're going to find a way to use it because it works great compared to what you're used to. So, it has a little ways to go, but we're coming into what I feel like is a really bullish time for it as the more and more resources, more and more eyes on it. It's Lightning Network is now synonymous with Bitcoin and the tech continues to scale. Now, one of the things I like about Lightning Network, and I'm talking my own book here, of course, but I don't mean my literal book. I mean, like the stuff I believe in. it's easy for me to be bullish, but there's some logic behind it. So one of the things that we look at Lightning Network is that you will be able to do other through Taro and other technologies. You're going to be able to do stable coins and other, NFTs, whether you like them or not, or whatever digital assets you want, stocks, it won't really matter. It'll be able to transact at just instantaneous, and it's coming. And so one of the things that we look at is also just get back to main internet roots. And we all have gone to websites where you get a page 404, page not found, and those are status codes. And those have been built into the internet for 35 years, 40 years. It's been a long time. There's status codes built into the actual fundamentals of the internet for payments and payments being completed. But there's never been a technology that was open source that anyone could use that could handle the scale of the internet until now. Now it's coming. You could see it. And I'm like, okay. And this is, let me get this straight. You have a technology where I could transact instant dollars, Bitcoin, whatever you want. Anyone can hop on. Anyone can use it. It is literally the internet itself at scale. And there's already response codes and native stuff built into the fundamentals of every web server and browser to actually handle it. Huh. Wonder where that's going to go. It seems, it will take a bit of time, but it's going to get there before you know it and start to continue to, get faster and faster as we speed towards it.
So do you think that answer sort of applies to broader and maybe bigger players in this kind of finance and payments game as well? I mean, you're really as Liquid Fintech's case, maybe you can correct me here if I'm wrong, Sean, but when I think about what you guys are doing, is it fair to say that you're trying to compete or derail Visa, MasterCard, those like credit card rails, but are you really their competitor, or are you trying to bring them into the fold?
They'll come into the fold. It's because like banking back in the day had all private networks, and they may still have some private. I don't know all the details of banking, but ultimately you do your banking online and banks communicate over TCP/IP, whether it be VLANs or private networks, but it's all TCP/IP. And so the same thing is going to happen for Visa and MasterCard. And I talked to the guys at Visa and I've said, hey, this is coming. It's not necessarily, we're not going to wipe Visa out. That's not what's going to happen, that they're going to morph and change and adapt. And ultimately take advantage of these things, because like the original layer of the internet, it allowed for last mile reach to all kinds of people all over the world, as opposed to having to have special access and all the different barriers that are put up there. And you get tech adoption, especially network adoption, when a network is 10x better than what was before it. The Lightning network is 10x better, has way further reach. It really does reach the last miles of the internet itself. Now, with that said, we look at places like Africa, Central America, South America, etc. One of the things that we have to look at is how far the internet is reached. And so we take it for granted, the internet's everywhere. Well, most places, Norway is 99.9%, and Canada's way up there, but you go to parts of Africa, it's 46%. So the Bitcoin and the internet and Lightning will grow in these places as access to the internet continues to grow, and people will get access to, continue to get access to smartphones and sovereign banking and all kinds of other things as those countries get brought forward. What's happening though is time is compressed and it's accelerating. So for the listeners out there, when Yahoo, which was still a big company, but when Yahoo set up Yahoo Japan back in the 90s, they literally put engineers on a plane with hard drives with all the directory information to set it up in Japan, because you couldn't send it over the wire. It would have taken months and months and months. It was impossible. But now, that'd be on a blink of an eye, right? It would just be 30 minutes. It wouldn't be that much of a thing. You wouldn't even think about it. So, the information, time, data, everything's compressed faster and faster. And so the adoption curve in some of these things is getting shorter and shorter.
So you mentioned there the other countries outside of Canada, North America, whatever. And I'm curious, I think this is a good idea. People talk about demand for Bitcoin, and oftentimes it's denominated in US dollars. Fine. That's like most assets in the world. Unfortunately, it's a reserve currency, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. This is how markets function. But you guys over at Liquid, sounds to me like you're looking abroad more than you're looking domestically and in the first world, we'll call it. Where are you looking exactly? Why are you looking there? And what are you looking for? You mentioned internet adoption, internet availability. What else is on that sort of checklist?
Yeah, so for us, we're building out infrastructure, and we have our nodes, and we're setting up as many channels as we can. So we want to have that network effect where the growth of the network carries us up faster than anything we can. So we've got nodes in India and Indonesia and Singapore and in all kinds of different places. We have a node now in South Africa as well, and we want to be on all these places so that as we continue to get channel connectivity, the growth of the network, which has this massive network effect, can carry us up faster than any sales and marketing campaign ever could. And so we do see the fee market continue to increase. The fees are becoming more normalized. They're still really, really cheap, and they'll still be very economical, but they just become, the idea of, free transfers is, well, there'll be some people who will do it, but generally, professional companies won't do that. And you'll pay a little more for the reliability as the network gets it more professionalized. But so we're looking at those areas there, and we want to work with companies that are in those spaces there. So we can provide our Bitcoin, our liquidity, our routing capabilities, our global sort of, reach with all of our nodes to help them facilitate transactions. So that's how we intend to grow. And we're working with companies like Breeze, which we've mentioned. They've got an amazing LSPD service. I think Roy had an article out a few weeks ago, really worth reading. We're mentioned in it, and just how they're bringing liquidity, chained liquidity, into their marketplace. So, where companies like ours are able to work with them in a chained liquidity basis, and we earn yield. And so, for the first time ever, you can earn yield on a non-custodial basis.
Yeah. So it's interesting because you guys have the partnership with Breeze. You mentioned that, and I do want to talk about that. But maybe in the same vein, Sean, talk to me about the liquidity provisions that Liquid is giving to the network, and why, you know, how important is that in terms of what you just mentioned, this sort of non-custodial yield? Really, this is where you make the money, right? And so tell me a bit about that. There's a lot of people who don't really understand how this works. I would include myself in those ranks, by the way. There's a reason, a little behind the scenes here. As I mentioned, you know, in the lead up, Len was going to do your interview. He's a lightning whiz. Me, I ain't a lightning whiz. So tell me and tell the listeners what are we talking about here?
Yeah, no problem. So when you know, the way that Lightning Network works is you have nodes and channels. That's what nodes and channels are the terms we use all the time. A node is just a computer or a server somewhere in the world, could be a Raspberry Pi, running the open source Lightning Network software. And when you run it, you create a full Bitcoin node. You put Bitcoin on it, and then you open channels to other node operators. And when you do a transaction, it may go through several hops until it gets to its final destination. Now, we know what the next hop is. We may not know what the final destination. Now, it works very similar to how internet traffic works, where we go to google.com, but we may go out through SHA or whatever, the cable or the fiber provider, and may go several hops. And if you do a trace route, you can see it going through those hops and eventually bouncing back to you. Very similar idea in terms of how the Lightning Network works, where, you know, it may go through multiple hops and get to its final destination. Now, one of the things that you have is, you know, right now the Lightning Network is, it's kind of like an abacus, where, you know, you need to rebalance channels. So you need to have Bitcoin on your channels, and you want to have transactions going both ways, so the Bitcoin, the channels remain balanced. Because if you have a one-way channel, eventually your channel gets drained, you have to close it, settle out the balances and reopen it and set it back up. So that gets down to liquidity. So the more Bitcoin you have on the network, the more channels that have enough volume and balance volume, the smoother transactions will go across the network. So for us, we come in there and we can put we have 100 plus Bitcoin on our balance sheet, and we can put that to work and continue to open channels on behalf of people, or in Breeze's case, we're connected to the LSPD and putting our Bitcoin to work on there for others to open channels on demand off of our network. And we charge for opening channels, and we charge a fee rate for it. And that's how we make our money. We see that being this huge growth catalyst, because it's automated and it scales. And so we're not interested in anything else but that, because we see just, you know, massive adoption of Lightning Network coming over the next, you know, next coming years here. And I say years, but we're, you know, every month it gets faster and faster, right?
Yeah. Kevin Rook, who's a Canadian guy, does a lot of Lightning Network stuff. He was on our show a little while ago. Yeah. He's tracking the, I guess adoption would be the right word, the usage of that, you know, that second layer. And it's incredible the speed at which this thing is growing, even though, as you mentioned, the UI is like, you know, is difficult to deal with, right? You know, you need special hardware and all that stuff. So are you guys thinking about UI at all? Are you contributing to that? Can you contribute to that?
We are not. We are just like, we just want to run infrastructure. We want to have platforms for the exchanges, other people around the world to hit a button. And our platform is designed in a way that it's all non-custodial. There's multi-user logins. So you've got admin users. You've got an audit user, because we're a public company. So we know that the importance of having an audit for a large company. You got to have an audit. They can only review reports. And you got user channels, where all user can just manage channels on behalf of the company. And so breaking it down, so that's the infrastructure. And then from there, everything tied into our nodes and our liquidity. That's where we're focused on right now. We see that as the race is on right now to establish yourselves as that LSP that's got enough connectivity all over the world. And I now the reason I'm so gung-ho on this, I remember back in the early 2000s, and they were digging up trenches to put in fiber, like down the streets of Vancouver.
What do you mean, in the early 2000s? Buddy, Bell was at my front door today talking about
they're still doing it, right?
Wires. Yeah.
Yeah, they're still doing it. But it was the big rush. And you go into the data centers, where it'd be Seattle Internet Exchange or Vancouver Internet Exchange, it doesn't matter. And you just sit there with your routers and your rack gear. And you'd see some other guy at some other company, like, hey, what company are you with? He's like, oh, I'm so-and-so. He goes, hey, you want to cross routes? And you're like, yeah, okay, sounds good. And I'm like, click. It makes, you know, you're bleeding off 15% of your traffic and you both have better routes. And so that's kind of what that race is on. The bigger your network, the more established you have it, the better it's going to be. So yes, you can open up channels privately to individuals and there'll be a lot of that kind of stuff going on. But ultimately, the sort of the backbone of the whole network is being built out. And that's where I see some similarities to what's going on Lightning, where that race to be established in that space.
Okay, so you guys are publicly traded. This is important for the next question because there's a lot of pressure. We talk about this on our program fairly often from specifically in the United States, maybe also in Canada, though I'm not 100% sure exactly what the nature of that game is here. But privacy and Bitcoin privacy is becoming hot button. We've seen software developers arrested overseas, you know, the Tornado Cash guys.
Yeah, it's crazy, right?
It's nuts. And so Lightning is being touted by some, Sean, as a privacy enhancing L2. I think that's the case. Do you guys have any concerns that this is going to negatively affect your business model at some point, unless the sort of nature of that layer two changes? And it doesn't sound like it's going to. Bitcoin is very resilient to change and doesn't seem to be interested in these limits. So you have a take on that?
I don't see it changing at all. In fact, I see, from our company's perspective, you know, we're publicly traded, we're audited, we have a board of directors, you got all the clarity, we're an open book in that sense. We're an infrastructure provider, and even for our routing, we don't handle transactions. The end companies that may be on our network or use our route across the network, let's example, say Netcoins or another exchange in Canada used it, they have all the KYC and the onboarding for their customers to be able to enable that. So from our perspective, we don't view it like that. We view it more like we're like a Bitcoin mine in a sense. We're just simply processing blocks or simply, you know, handling the network infrastructure. But you know, in terms of where, you know, where is true privacy going to come from? And I say this because my background, for some people who don't know, we've done analytics and compliance software, and it's built. And well, that was one of the reasons we went public and bought Netcoins, because we could create a compliance first exchange that got fully licensed and regulated, which was millions of dollars and a long process. And we did hard work that wasn't popular. Now it's going to change over time, because as more and more Bitcoin is used, you're going to spend Bitcoin directly. And the more volume of transactions that are out there, the harder it is going to be tracked, because just, you know, you got to sift through much more data, and you have to be worthwhile looking at. Now I have this thing I talk about in my book called, you know, proof of work for analytics, because, you know, I founded an analytics company. First off, Bitcoin is an open network. It will be analyzed. It's going to be analyzed. The network will push back, and the network will have other mechanisms for privacy. And this is a good thing. We want to make it difficult so that the data can't be data mined. It can't be just trolled in mass. And that they can't really, but it you'll see the network continue to taproot and snore. You know, these are excellent things. All that kind of stuff is great. Layer 2 Lightning Network, another mechanism. But and one of the concepts we have in proof of work for analytics is that if there's enough will and resources thrown at trying to track down an individual, they're probably going to find them. And we talk about the story of cracking Enigma, the code for during the World War II, where there was so much desperation they found a way to do it. And my point is, that's a great example of proof of work for analytics. There was a tremendous cost to doing it, and you want to have a tremendous cost. So this gets down to what is anonymity versus privacy. And when you get, and we have, like, you know, let's say Wall Street in 2008 financial crisis, you had all kinds of stuff going on there behind the scenes. Nobody knew anything about, still don't. And, people do bad things. There are a segment of the population will do bad things when they know they can get away with it. And so it's an example of why do you have the United Nations go into a war-torn area? Because when they're there, they're less likely to have massacres or other problems because somebody's watching. And so, in many ways, Bitcoin has that sort of self-regulation in there, because it is this network of trust. I imagine it, and the book is actually titled "Trust on the Rise of Bitcoin." Its actual original title was "Intellectual Imperialism, Corruption, and the Rise of Bitcoin." And we talk about that in there. So thankfully, somebody, you know, an advisor's like, "You need a better title," and she was good. And what basically what we're saying is, like, you know, we look at Bitcoin as money and payments and all this stuff, but ultimately, as we extend it as part of the internet, we see it as a way to actually reduce corruption in these corrupt countries. And so we talk about, you know, imperialism. Well, it never really died. It just simply moved to the point where we strip mine intellectual capacity from developing nations. We don't leave them with their best and brightest. We simply by offering them a better way of life, and in Canada, United States, England, what have you. And why wouldn't they leave? Because they're in a highly corrupt country where you can't get ahead, and they're kleptocracies, and they have all kinds of problems because there's no systems of governance, there's no trust in their governments, no trust in their money. But imagine if you can, and Bitcoin not just used for money in these places and currency and backing whatever there, but let's say you're using it as a marker via Lightning Network or other smart contracts on the Bitcoin network, what have you. We don't know what the future, but ultimately as a mechanism to establish trust within these nations. Now, over a period of 2-3 generations, you give people less reason to leave. And if they can retain their best and brightest, and people can have confidence, you can see these countries be pulled out of the muck that they're in. And otherwise, you're just going to have the same thing where the world, you know, world banks are going to continue to lend them money and keep them enslaved. And the, you know, the kleptocracy will steal that money and keep their people enslaved and so forth. But now we actually have a mechanism that we can potentially make that change over a period of multiple generations.
So where, this is a good time to get into this book, because I'm curious, like the title and the whole thought around Bitcoin as a trust layer or trust protocol, this is your brainchild. Yeah.
So yes.
How did you come up with this? Like, I'm curious because it seems like I've heard by this time, Sean, how many hours, hundreds of thousands of hours have I listened to podcasts while making eggs and bacon in the morning? And I've heard a million different like think boy takes about Bitcoin is war, Bitcoin is peace, Bitcoin is anger, Bitcoin is happiness, whatever. What? Tell me about this trust layer thing.
Right.
You kind of went into it there a little bit. And I'm like, expand on that a little bit, because I think it's an interesting idea that I've not heard. So.
Right. So I mean, it's just part of my background. I mean, there's other people have gone out there and talked about it as the eighth layer. And I remember coming up with those concepts early on and then hearing other people validate it. There's the book called, I think it's called The Truth Machine, which is another good one. And you know, our thesis is very simple. We grew up, myself and other people in my group, working on internet tech from the 90s. And people didn't know what we were doing. We were just, they're the computer guys. We have no idea what they're doing. We were literally building out the internet and internet tech and, you know, search analytics and websites and you name it, the infrastructure we're using today. And so that's that original, like we said, that's original seven layers of the internet itself. And Bitcoin at its core, it's like a global timestamp system that just sort of rolls along, and you can use that digital timestamp system for anything. And when we see it as that eighth layer where it solves the ability for trust, like how do you, we used to have trust centralized. We used to have, you know, Microsoft to do their DRMs and whatever other nonsense that nobody wanted to use because nobody trusted them. But ultimately, you know, it was a computer problem that was solved. And so when we think about it as trust for a second, what does it actually do? Well, it allows us to, one, handle a transaction, but you could assign that transaction to anything. You could put it as a digital timestamp on a land deed. You can put it on whatever you want. And nobody can refute that information. So now you have this trust layer that extends the capabilities of the internet. And its first use case, which is a natural use case, is ultimately money. And at the end of the day, what is money? Good money is trust. You trust it's going to be money. You know it's settled. It's I hand you a bar of gold. You know it's a bar of gold. It's not very convenient in our day and age, but that was the old school trust, right? And of course, we tried to use fiat to represent gold, and that's been rugged. It's been rugged. So I hope that explains it, but that's really where we get down to the premise of the book and ultimately how trust is so important in society, where, you know, you need to trust your money. You have trust in the internet. The internet itself, you know, it was grown out of, it continues to morph around the world. We even talk about regulations and regulators. There is some importance to have, you know, some watchful eyes at certain things to watch over to make sure that the FTXs of the world don't happen in certain areas. But the beauty of Bitcoin is the network is a morally agnostic trust network that doesn't care who you are or where you are in the world. It doesn't matter. You just use it if you want to or not. And it's not judgmental. It just works and does its thing. And it's all, and it does that in the modern era of the digital age.
It's an interesting thesis. I got to get a copy of the book and read it, and I'll highlight a bunch of stuff that I don't understand and tell you about it. So the thing. Okay, so let's go back to Liquid. So a couple things that I was thinking, and Len also, you know, sent me a couple of questions here that I do want to get into. One of them, and it's a big one, not just in Lightning, Sean, but in Bitcoin broadly. Mm-hmm. Merchants offering Lightning payments are taxable events. Yeah. So is there a way around something like that, or something you guys are considering, or I, you know, dare I say, Are you trying to play the political game a little bit, maybe with some of your Bitcoin peers? Yeah. And saying, look, you guys got to fix some of these rules. This is unreasonable for emerging money. What do you think?
Well, I think it's inevitably going to fix itself because there's the sheer volume of transactions become an event that just overwhelms, you know, the tax departments. You just can't track it or keep this. It's bigger than anything. And it reminds, you know, it's kind of, you know, is it a taxable? Is it, you know, I don't know. Right now, you know, it's taken in El Salvador as a national currency. And there are international laws saying, hey, when you have to convert another currency into your own currency, it's not a taxable event. So I think there's actually a precedent there. And that's one of the things that when that event meant, that's the biggest thing it meant to me. It's like, you can't go back under international law, as far as unless someone can correct me on this. It's not my area of expertise, but just knowing how if I took Bitcoin down there, and I bought Bitcoin down there because I'm paying in El Salvador on vacation, and I want to come back here and convert it into Canadian dollars, why is that a taxable event? I just took another nation's currency and converted it back, and that's done every day. And this is totally legal. And then there's a lot of precedent for it. And I think that's the area that we should be pushing, is, you know, international laws and treaties that protect those rights. And I think that's actually where it will go as more countries continue to adopt it. It will become a currency and have to be ratified. But I actually think there's likely legal precedent based on what El Salvador did.
Huh. Okay. Interesting. Now, talk to me about sort of the, I guess this liquid tech, right? You guys have this SaaS type mm-hmm. branch of your company there. Who exactly is the target audience for that at the moment?
Right. I mean, you know, we're not targeting end users. We're not targeting, you know, small businesses can use it. We're really targeting players within the industry, the other wallet providers, other exchanges that haven't adopted yet. People who want to get on board, and there may be actually some other payment companies, you know, enterprise is really where we're going with it. And one of the reasons we're going there is because that's who's going to eventually drive volume and traffic. And we want volume and traffic across our network. We want to be able to earn fees off of it. So, I mean, yes, there's a base fee for the network, and those fees are climbing up, but ultimately we just see that volume continuing to climb. So we're really targeting enterprise. We see that adoption will start to happen more and more. And I really actually think that adoption is going to happen over as you see technologies like Taro and stuff like that, especially in North America. But there's other developing mm-hmm. countries that and developing companies that we're looking at and looking to work with. ATM operators that are in the Bitcoin space potentially and other stuff like that. So the market's getting bigger and bigger as more people demand it. And the infrastructure is continue to get up to speed to be able to handle it at a professional level. But I get back to that whole, I do believe, you know, US dollar is not going to go away tomorrow. You know, and you have to get out of our mind. Not yet. I mean, they'll change and morph, and maybe the Treasury will buy Bitcoin to back the US dollars and central bank digital currencies. You know, it'll be crazy. I actually went on record and I'm in public on a Chinese television show. I said two things. I said, one, that China banning miners is going to go back in history as a huge geopolitical mistake. They seem to be rather offended by that, but that's okay. I'm never invited back. and eventually the Federal Reserve and other banks will use the Lightning Network to transmit dollars around the world. And so, you know, because it's a network that can handle things 10, you know, a million, 100 times better than anything else in the last mile. So this is coming, and that's my predictions going out there. And we're still in the early days for it, where the music of chairs being played of who's going to be, you know, the major infrastructure providers around it, who's going to have the technology and the routing, the capabilities for it. And we're building out other capabilities to manage our network at scale and then let the network growth come to us.
So there's some questions in the chat about the reverse split. We may as well address it. It was in November, yeah, I think, right? So yeah. so give me the rationale. Talk to me about that.
Yeah. Well, we needed to make ourselves more attractive to investors to get a little more cash on the till. And so our market cap is still about the same market cap. It hasn't changed. And it wasn't, you know, what a year. It went from, you know, we went from this time, April, I think, what event did we have? We had Three Arrows. We had Celsius. Yeah. We had Voyager.
A summer and fall of just destruction and carnage.
It was a very miserable time in the public markets, and we're coming out. It feels like we're coming out of it now. The mood's definitely better. Our price has stabilized. We got a little more cash in the till. We held our Bitcoin, the majority of it, and we got our products out the door. And we're going to keep, you know, we intend to keep the float tight, and just build and let the market come to us here. So, you know, that was a tough decision, but ultimately I think it was the right decision, and it'll play itself out very well. I feel like it'll play itself out very well in the next bull market here. So we're just going to stick to our guns. And when my history with BIGG and others, I've always made tough decisions and always done it to what's best for the company to get through to the other side. And our market space is big. So I appreciate our shareholders sticking in there with us. You know, we're here standing and we feel like we're stronger than ever. And we've got some good backers. We've got loyal shareholders. We've got Bitcoin in the balance sheet. We're in the Lightning Network space. We've got product and we're getting into, you know, our sales side, our nodes are growing. So there's a lot of positive upside. And I will go on record saying I am glad last year is over.
The number of companies we talk about on a weekly basis that were sponsoring conferences, FTX, yes. Compass, these guys are all, you know, what's the French term? Tits up now. So this is like any company is still standing in my books is pretty good. BIGG, obviously, and you guys are still standing too. Now, I got a question here. When you mentioned sales and there are comments in the chat that I am going to address. I see the comments. Give me a little bit of time here, okay? And it's a good question and one that I want to ask as well. When you guys are approaching potential clients, potential investors, big investors, what are the hurdles? Because to you and me, Sean, and the shareholders in general, Bitcoiners in general, it's obvious where this is going, I think. And sometimes maybe I miss the forest for the trees or I can't see the initial hurdles that people have trouble with when it comes to Bitcoin and Lightning. You must see them all the time. What are they?
Yeah, we do. I mean, we certainly do. I mean, look, you got a lot of investors out there, and the average age for most investors and big investors in the market is much older than a lot of the Bitcoiners. And they're still wrapping their mind around the tech. They've gotten used to Bitcoin now. So we've gone back in the day from where it's, you know, it was all about blockchain in 2016, 17 to it's all about Bitcoin. And all about Bitcoin, and now they're wrapping their minds around Lightning Network and seeing that is a big opportunity there. But, you know, it was a tough market for a lot of investors. And I talked to a lot of big investors, a lot of, not just people in our company, but just around. And there was a lot of stress in the market, a lot of money sitting on the sidelines waiting for things to bottom out and flush out. And there just seemed to be, you know, bad news after bad news, not necessarily directed to us, but certainly the marketplace. And the FTX thing was the final sort of, you know, massive blowout. And, you know, I know other companies that were trying to go public at the time in the Bitcoin space, and they weren't going to make it. So it's, we did what we had to do, and we've come out the other side. We're still standing, and you know, we're like that. But we do see there's an uptick, and there seems to be a lot more investor interest. And I'm talking about bigger investor interest. And brokers are, you know, the markets are going, it feels like they're going to come back here at some point, not necessarily just for Bitcoin, but in general. And that's, so the general malaise affected everybody, and it was a tough time. So I had talked to big financiers and brokers, and they're like, it's been a terrible year. nobody was in a good mood. Like,
anybody, anytime.
I'm all excited about Lightning or Bitcoin. I'm like, where we're going, and we're, you know, this is the future, and you got to get on board. Nobody wanted to hear from you. So we just kept our heads down and kept building, right? And just build out and hunker down, keep our costs under control, keep things tight, and just weather the storm.
That's the right way to do business, Sean. Now tell me, you guys, obviously you have a relationship with Big and Mark over there. Mm-hmm. What is the nature of the relationship with Big at the moment? What are you guys working on together? Anything?
Well, I mean, I think the obvious thing, I mean, I can't talk about stuff that's not disclosed yet or not, and not signed up yet, but certainly, you know, they've got their, we have a long relationship there in terms of Netcoins and the, you know, where we talk a lot about where the market is going in terms of tech and the public markets as well, just in terms of where it's going for companies like ours and the timelines to see things get to calmer water. So that's kind of been the discussions really, and sort of tech and integrations and what's going to happen as the market continues to turn. So I don't want to speak for BIGG because I'm not on the board there anymore. And I'm,
you sure you don't want to
there.
You can if you want, feel free. It's after 7 o'clock.
After 7 o'clock. Jeez. Yeah, no, it's a loose lips thing ships, but disclosure laws are very serious, so I'll be very careful. But no, we have a good relationship there, and we talk all the time about industry stuff, and also just, you know, what we're doing on our end and how it relates to what they're doing on their end and where all these trends are going here. Of note, we actually put out a tweet yesterday. We're going to be at the MicroStrategy conference coming up next week.
Great.
So we got a booth. Yeah, we're stoked about it. So we got a booth. We just found the location today. We're right next to River Financial and right across from MicroStrategy.
Good company.
So we're like,
nice.
All right. That's where we want to be. So we're going to be hitting it hard and working hard down there. So we're pretty stoked about it.
I'm glad to hear that. Now, this is the last question before I get you out of here. And it's a question that's coming up a lot, especially in the United States with Coinbase, because these guys seem completely unwilling to even entertain Lightning adoption. And there's a couple of big Canadian exchanges. Netcoin is obviously you mentioned, but there are others who are not talking about Lightning at all. I'm thinking about ShakePay. I'm thinking about Newton. I'm thinking about WonderFi. A couple of these other WonderFi, right? And so like, are you talking to them? Can you even talk about that? I know WonderFi is also publicly traded now. So like, what is the
We have to be careful what we talk about. But certainly, they know who we are. And they're, you know, they have a lot on their plate too. They've been going through like every BIG, WonderFi, they all went through this upside down market. And so they've had a rough, you know, everybody's had a rough time. It's been very unpleasant. And, you know, I'm pretty sure trading volumes fell off last summer and they had to, you know, they had to focus on building and making and keeping costs under control and so forth. So everybody's been just busy surviving. And now the technology and Lightning Network back then wasn't quite mature enough. And now it's getting to that point. So I think they're seeing other exchanges adopt it. You know, Kraken has it, Bitfinex has it. I personally believe it's only a matter of time for Coinbase and then everybody else is going to be racing to the finish line on that. So we'll see where that goes. I don't want to put anything out there that is not confirmed, but you know, that market is, it's continuing to build and build and they're going to have to get into it. Eventually you're going to see other Canadian exchanges likely get on it as well.
Is the problem that that's going to cut into their revenues?
No, the problem is manpower and being able to add enough, you know, and focus. And so not focus in the sense that they already have development cycles on the go and they need to slot it in. They need to actually, you know, build it in properly to their app and where they're going to go with it. Right. So that's that for a lot of companies. It's just, you know, they take one or two cycles to sort of slot it in and get it in. As much as I'm excited and they should drop it in next week, that's not going to happen. So they need to plan it out and drop it. And they've got things that all other things that are already being built out as well. And I like to call it a Bitcoin exchange, but let's face it, it's a crypto exchange. And, you know, that means they're adding other chains and other cryptos, like it or not, being a Bitcoiner, but, you know, it's what people, it's where the demand is. So there's a lot of time spent on that as well.
Yeah, it's fair. I know we've tackled that on the show a few times. The you know, the best Bitcoin companies have to make money somehow, and it's not always easy to do strictly Bitcoin. You have to offer, you know, the one that starts with E and the other ones as well from time to time, make the spread, make the scalp and all that. It's not, you know, ideal, but this is the nature of the business. So, okay, Sean, what's next for Liquid? Tell me about that and then you can tell people where they can find you.
Yeah, definitely. So, next for Liquid, we're pushing hard on our into sales cycle and trying to grow our channels. So channel growth is our number one thing. Transaction volumes are number one thing. I can see us raising our fees slightly to more in line with what, you know, Breeze is doing and generating revenue there. So that's really our immediate focus. And then using, machine learning and et cetera, and all of our data sets to automate more of that, the channel management and the node management at scale. That's our immediate focus.
I like it. That's great. So where, if people want to learn more about you or the company or the stock or, I don't know if you do like an Instagram where you bake stuff, share that.
No baking. And I'm pretty, you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Sean Anstey. You can look me up there. I'm on Twitter. Happy to follow me. I answer what questions I can. Liquidfintech.com. If you want to look at the public company stuff, keep in mind, we can't answer forward looking questions. There's a lot of regulations around that, but I'm an open book when it comes to Bitcoin and anything else we're doing and where, you know, what we can talk about that's already been disclosed. So, and we're here and we're pushing forward, right? And we're bringing capital markets into Bitcoin and trying to bring that the all those resources to bear to help bring Bitcoin forward and continue to build out. But
absolutely,
I want to just shout out to the shareholders. I know it was a tough year last year, and I really thank you all for sticking in there. And I'm glad last year's over. We're still standing. We built out, and we're continuing to go forward. And we see better days ahead, and we're just going to keep pressing forward on that. Bitcoin's, you know, feels like we have a bright future with it.
I think so too. Liquid FinTech, great Canadian company. Sean Anstey, thank you everyone for tuning in, listening. We'll talk to you when we talk to you. Take care.
Great, thank you.
Great job, buddy.